A Brush with the Army by Jane Howes. I lived in Vietnam in the 90s. It was a really interesting time to be there. In the late 80s, the government had introduced a policy of Doi Moi, which means reconstruction. The idea was for Vietnam to keep on being a communist country, but with a market economy. The joys of capitalism seemed to be catching on, and people's lives were looking up for the first time in decades. The 90s were a time of great change. Towards the end of my time there, I took a trip around the north with three friends. Even though my friends were all Vietnamese, they hadn't seen much of the northern part of the country. Vietnam is communist, and particularly in those days, was quite strict. Vietnamese citizens weren't free to travel around the country wherever they wanted. They needed permits, just as foreigners did. And sometimes it was harder for a Vietnamese to get hold of a permit than it was for a foreigner. Travel for pleasure wasn't really approved of. Anyway, I guess my friends got the permits they needed. We planned our route, hired a Land Rover and a driver, and we were ready to go. We set off early one morning, stopping off for breakfast about 2 hours out of Hanoi. My friends ordered rice wine and boiled eggs. It was unusually hard to crack the eggshell, and when I finally did crack it, the first thing I saw inside was feathers. A popular Vietnamese delicacy, a boiled egg with a baby duck inside, in its last stages of development. Ugh. Is this what you asked for? Yes, try it, it's delicious. I didn't want to start the trip by disappointing my friends, but I just couldn't face it. Their expressions showed that I'd let them down. Obviously, their expectations were too high. This would soon change. We travelled on for another few hours, twisting our way along mountain roads. The scenery was spectacular. It was mountainous country, but every slope was terraced so that rice or other crops could be planted. Sometimes the terraces only seemed to be about a metre wide, but every centimetre of land was used. It was late spring and the vegetation was lush and green, the paddies almost fluorescent. Our plan was to travel west, through Harbin, and carry on all the way to the Lao border at Dien Bien Phu. We would then head northeast to Sapa, and then south again to Hanoi. We only had 6 days, but we planned to get around. We spent a night in a small town in Harbin, eating a Con Binh Dan, or everyday rice, for dinner. This dish includes rice, plus a selection of meat and vegetable dishes. It was pretty much like what I ate every day in Hanoi. Green river reed, gristly chicken, snails and silkworms. Nothing special, but I wasn't after any more surprises. The next day, we were up early to continue on to Dien Bien Phu. This is a town where a decisive battle was fought against the French in 1954. Until this battle, much of Vietnam had been a French colony, called Indochina at the time. But in 1954, the French were beaten and Vietnam became a republic under Ho Chi Minh, or Uncle Ho, as everyone calls him in Vietnam. We arrived in Dien Bien Phu in the late afternoon. We checked into our hotel and all went off to our separate rooms to rest. After about 20 minutes, I got tired of resting, so I slipped away quietly and left the hotel. I wandered along a couple of dusty streets until I came across a river. The riverbank on my side of the river was very overgrown, making it hard to walk along. So I took off my sandals and walked along the river itself. It was very shallow. I'd only gone a few metres when I heard a shout. I looked up and there was a soldier pointing a gun at me. He told me to get out of the water, so I started to walk towards the bank, my bank. He told me to come to his side, that he was arresting me. "Come on," I said, "there's no need for that. I was just going for a walk. I'll go back home." "No," he said. "This is a military camp. You're trespassing on government property. You have to come with me. Hurry up. It was hard to believe he was serious. On the other hand, when a teenager points a gun at you, it's probably best to go along with him. I got out on his side of the river, put on my sandals, and we headed across the fields to the army buildings. He walked behind me with his rifle in his hands, though not actually pointing at me. We passed a group of young soldiers playing football, and they all stopped and shouted out comments. I didn't understand most of what they said, but I think it was quite rude. My soldier clearly didn't go in for that kind of behaviour. He shouted at them to be quiet and looked quite embarrassed. He took me to a small hut made of bamboo and shut me in. I could hear him talking on the radio, though I could not make out what he said. He came back inside, asked me to sit down, poured me some tea, and told me that we would have to wait. I offered him a cigarette, and we smoked in silence for a bit. Then I decided to try to establish a bit of a connection. I might need him on my side. I asked how old he was, 18, and where he was from. He was from a village a long way from here, he said. After about 20 minutes, three other men in uniform turned up. My boy stood up and saluted, so I guess they were officers. They asked for my passport, which I told them I had left at the hotel. Then they asked what I was doing on military property. My answer, just going for a walk, didn't seem to satisfy them. They took my day pack and tipped the contents out on the table. When they saw my camera, they asked what I had been taking photos of. I explained that I hadn't taken any photos of DMB and Fu, that the last photo I had taken had been of some children in a village early this morning. The senior officer apologised, but said that he would have to take the film out of the camera, which he then did. It was all very polite. I offered them all cigarettes, and they all accepted with thanks. And I thought that they would probably let me go. After about 15 minutes, the officer told the young man who had first arrested me to keep guard, and he and the other men left, saying they would see me later. I said, "Wait, I'm travelling with some friends, some Vietnamese friends, and they will probably be worried about me." He said he would come back soon. The young soldier and I chatted for a while. My Vietnamese was too limited to get into very complex conversation, and anyway, he was too shy. But we talked about family and our homes for a while. After about an hour, the officers came back. They said they would take me back to my hotel. And they did, all four of them. I was smiling to myself, relaxing a bit now that they were letting me go. I wondered what my friends would think when we got back. We walked into the hotel, and two of my friends were at reception, looking worried. The receptionist was on the phone. As we walked in, he hung up, and everyone started to speak at once. I found I was very tired, and I couldn't follow the conversation anyway, so I sat down on a sofa. "Stand up," hissed one of my friends in English. "You need to show respect to these people." I stood up and tried to keep up with the conversation. Impossible. The soldiers finally finished talking to my friends, and they turned to me and, smiling, shook my hand and said goodbye. "Thank God that's over," I said. "Over?" said one friend. "It's not over. The soldiers want their dinner, but they say we have to go to the police station at 8 o'clock. They've taken away all our passports." "But why? Why would they do that?" "We'll find out at 8 o'clock, said my friend. "But I suspect we are going to have to pay to get them back. Let's go and eat." To say that it wasn't a pleasant meal would be an understatement. My friends spent the whole time telling me off. They went on and on about how I didn't understand Vietnam, and now my selfish actions had got them all into trouble. I sympathised up to a point. They had a justifiable fear of any police interaction, but I had only gone for a walk. I tried to point this out to them, but they weren't interested. They just went on and on for the whole meal. Don't you know that they've been cracking down on Vietnamese nationals lately? You just do whatever you want, counting on your foreign passport to protect you. But what about us? Yes, you think you fit in, that you understand this country, but you don't. You need to wake up to that fact. You're a foreigner, and you'll never understand Vietnam. Eventually, our driver got sick of this, or perhaps he saw that I wasn't bearing up too well, and he told them to ease up. They tried to hold back their comments then, but the occasional criticism slipped out. I think that they were all actually really worried about the police and were taking it out on me. I just concentrated on my food and tried to hold myself together. Then it was time to go to the police station. The fee for my trespassing and the return of the passports was negotiated for a while. It was odd. My friends told me to leave all the talking to them, to make out that I didn't understand any Vietnamese. But I was shut up with them for over 2 hours, I said, and we spoke for most of that time. Well, now you don't speak anymore. We'll speak for you. I agreed to do it their way. It was clear that I had caused a fair amount of trouble. Unfortunately, the soldiers and police thought that I could still speak Vietnamese and addressed many questions to me. They seemed surprised when I didn't answer. Maybe they wondered if they'd been imagining it all, this foreigner that spoke Vietnamese with a Hanoi accent. The negotiation ended with the payment of a substantial fine, about $200 US, and smiles and handshakes. They handed back our passports and papers, and we were free to go. I was shattered, but still had to put up with another hour of conversation with my friends. They told me off for everything, for going for a walk, for not telling them where I was going, for thinking that I understood Vietnam, for being selfish and not thinking about them. The driver had stayed to have a beer with the policeman, so there was no one to stick up for me this time. This episode coloured the rest of the trip somewhat. We still went to Sapa. It's a beautiful mountain town, with a lively market full of all the Hmong villagers in their colourful costumes. But our relationship wasn't the same. Sometimes it would seem like they'd forgiven me, and we'd get along pretty well. But then something would spark them off, and the whole thing would flare up again. It was always the driver who would speak up for me in the end, and tell them to leave me alone. They were clearly very put out by my behaviour, and I found it difficult to get over how angry they'd been. It was a relief, really, to get back to Hanoi early on the sixth day and to go our separate ways.